todos. So at the beginning of the parasha, we have Yitzchak and Rivka davening for a child. Vayetzer Yitzchak l'Hashem l'nochach isho ki akarahi vayasar lo Hashem atar Rivka ishto. So he davens, Rivka also davens, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers Yitzchak. Primarily Yitzchak before Rivka, Rashi says, because Yitzchak had a schus of Avraham Avinu. Rivka's tefillos obviously count, but her father was a Rasha, so the tefillos of a Tzadik ben Tzadik carry more weight. They're fighting inside, the babies are fighting inside the mother's womb, and she goes to seek some guidance from the Yeshiva of Shem Be'ever to know exactly what to do, what this all means. So she receives this prophecy that's transmitted to her, that you have these two nations, two progenitors of great peoples. The Jews, of course, Yaakov Avinu and Esav, the families of Edom, and ultimately the Roman Empire, that will all come from his lineage. Okay, and they're busy fighting out. Zal tell us there was a struggle here, not just of might, two little babies, but it was an existential struggle of good and evil, and who will once in the future control the world and allow it and rule the world. So the question is, what exactly was she so bothered by? What was she so bothered by? Now, okay, it might be confusing. We know that Midrashim say it was confusing for her. She went to the Beis Avodah Zarah, she went to the shul, and there was different reactions from her children. She didn't know it was two children. She thought maybe it was only one kid, and here they are fighting in two different locations. One's trying to get out of here, one's trying to get out of there. But it's not the first time that a woman who's pregnant had some challenges during pregnancy. It's not so crazy. Sometimes it can be uncomfortable. Sometimes it can be very uncomfortable. Sometimes it can be painful. And like I said, not a joke, when we make a bracha every morning, Shalom Asani Isha, one of the things that we're supposed to have in mind is that many experiences that are unique to women, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave men their own problems, but there's certain things that are challenges for women, and it's a bracha for them, and it's a bracha for them, and they should take pride in that wonderful ability that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them. But a person who doesn't have to go through that challenge, who can seek forms of Avodas Hashem in other ways that don't carry those same challenges, you have to be thankful for everything. You have to be thankful for everything. That's one meaning of Shalos and Isha. But no male will ever know what it's like to carry a baby for 9 months, and we have to have sensitivity and understanding for that challenge. But what was Rivka so bothered by? So the Kedushas Levi tells us in Chassidus that there was something deeper beneath the surface that was going through her mind, that she didn't go to the doctor, right? Where did she go? She went to the yeshiva to ask the Rosh Yeshiva, to ask the Navi, what's the problem? She didn't go to the doctor, right? So there's something more plaguing her and concerning her. And he says as follows, V'tomerim kim lama zaynoch ha-pirush, al pi the cause of our Rizal. The Rizal says, Noshim tzidkanios ein lahem tzar ibur v'leidah. A tzadikas does not experience any pain over the course of pregnancy and childbirth and labor. Based on Gemara and Sota, Yud, based on Manav. Im kein Rivka, shorosa sheish latzar, choshva b'dayta, she ein a tzidkanios. So if you're Rivka, and you're having this massive, massive fight inside of you, and it's painful, so she's not just worried about the physical pain. What's her first reaction? Her first reaction is, all right, you know, I guess I don't match up to the Arizal's level of tzidkanias. Maybe it's because of my family. Maybe it's because of my father, my brother, where I come from. I don't make the cut. And that's why I'm experiencing this. That was her initial reaction. Dim kein, im lochein hayla tzar ibar. Because if that was not the case, if she was a tzaddik, if I was on the level of Sari Menu, then I would not be undergoing this pain right now. V'yodua d'mishen etov v'yeshra sh'yesha bodava kedusha. So she said, she had herself in this mindset where I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. And if I'm not worthy, so it means that I can't be a source of Kedusha. And if that's the case, when she went by the house of Shem Be'ever, when she went to the Bat Midrashos, and it seemed like Yaakov was Mefarchiz Lotzes, like Lashon Chazal, Im kein rasa, the second paragraph, im kein rasa, sheyesh b'kirbo echad shum korban kedusha. So evidently, there was something holy inside of her. Sheba over makom kedusha rotz latzeis, because he was trying to get out when she passed a holy place. V'yadua Likutei Torah from the Baal Tanya, the Makor Kedusha Nikra Anochi. Dahanu Anochi Hashem Elokecha. What does Rivka say? She feels this pain inside, and she asks, Lama ze Anochi? Why is this happening to me? Right? So we read the pasuk as like anyone's, oh, why me? Why me? No. There's something much deeper. Something much deeper. Lama ze Anochi? What's Anochi? Anochi is the first word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's communication with Klal Yisrael. Anochi is when Hashem reveals himself to the Jewish people for the very first time at Har Sinai. Anochi denotes the source of all Kedusha, because that was word number one uttered to the Jewish people. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. So when she asks, Lama ze Anochi? She's asking, like, where is the godliness come from? Where? Hello, I'm the Russia, right? I'm the one who's undergoing this pain. I'm the one who's not worthy. I'm the one with the Russian side. Lama ze Anochi? Why am I suddenly also feeling this confusing holy experience? Lama ze Anochi? That when I pass the Beis Medrash, there's something inside of me that's also agitating to come out, right? So it was a confusion that stemmed from the fact that she had already labeled herself or stamped herself as bad, as not making the cut, not being like one of the Emos. So there's a fascinating takeaway just from that, meaning sometimes we put ourselves as, you know, we put ourselves in that box and we say, oh, you know, this is me. And that's him, that's the other person. Like we said yesterday, it doesn't matter what you were born with, you never say, oh, that's just who I am, and that's how I'm going to be. That's a fatal mistake. So that's one takeaway. The other takeaway, however, is that, give me a second, Shai, her initial reaction was reflective and introspective. Her initial reaction was, if there's a problem here, the problem is me. The only downside was that had she not received this nevuah, that might have had a crippling effect on her. The fact that she learned it's not just me, it's this conflict that's going on inside of me. There's a duality. Then she was able to move forward and break from that, and not get stuck in that rut. But the initial reaction was introspective. Yes, Shai.
Well, Moshe had the same reaction when God said he's going to be the speaker and commentator for the Jewish people. It doesn't mean they're bad. They just don't think they're on that level where there are better people who can have hold the position. So it's not necessarily they're bad. They're just not on that level yet.
Okay. So she was saying, again, in the words of the Kedushas Levi, and we'll get to Moshe Rabbeinu, you're Machaven, we'll talk about Moshe Rabbeinu a little bit later. Her reaction was, I can't be undergoing this pain and also be the source of Kedusha. So whatever level she places herself at, she still crippled her self-image by saying, like, this doesn't fit. This doesn't fit. But I'm not even trying to dwell on that. I'm not trying to dwell. I'm not arguing your point. Yeah, I can't say that she decided that she was, that's it, I'm going to Gehenna, and, you know, like she said, I'm putting an end to this. No, it means she wasn't tzaddikus. She wasn't tzaddikus. And that's why, Shai, I think the takeaway that we can focus on is not that she decided that she's the biggest Russian in the world, but initially her reaction was the fault is mine. Right? The initial reaction is, let me look deeper inside of myself and see where this is coming from. This is a theme we see at the end of this week's parsha. We'll take a look at that again. And we see it all over Tanakh, that the tzaddikim behave in a certain way that give us a very practical Mr. Haskell in terms of how we deal with other people and deal with things that we encounter in our lives. Let's go back to Parsha's told us, same Parsha. Perach of Zion at the end. Vayomer liYitzchak Aviv mi'ata, vayomer ani bincha b'chorcha Esav. After Yaakov leaves, he has his bracha, he escapes, Esav comes in, and suddenly there's confusion. Because another son is asking Yitzchak for a bracha. Yitzchak doesn't know what to do. He says, who are you? He says, I'm Esav. What do you mean? You told me to come and get a bracha. I'm your firstborn son. I'm waiting. Vayecharad Yitzchak harad the gedol admod. Yitzchak vayecharad. What does that mean? Like Charedi. He was petrified. He was shaking. Right? He was afraid. But he wasn't just afraid. This was a harad the gedol admod. Vayomer mi efa was outside of Avili. Wait a second. Who's the other guy? Who are you? I gave him bracha. I ate from his food. Confirms the bracha. But where are you coming from, Esav? What was the other guy? What was he so afraid of? What was he so afraid of? Whatever Yitzchak knew about Esav or didn't know, you know, from a very young age, Esav was a scary guy. Okay? From the time he was born, he was probably a little bit scary too, right? He was this big, burly, hairy hunter. Okay? What's a raya? Yitzhak knew if he wanted a good meal, you know, you talk to Esav and Esav's going to come home with the steak or the venison or even better, right? So if you knew that Esav was had a little temper and you just mess things up or mess him over, who knows what he could do to me? That's not what Rashi says. Rashi says, from the Medrash Tanchuma, Lama Chared Yitzhak, what was he so afraid of? Amar Shema Avon Yishbi Shebacharti Akotl Ve'agadol. V'shanisi Seder Yachas. Shema Avon Yishbi. Maybe there's an Aveira. Maybe it's my shortcoming. Right? Mistakes don't happen just by accident. If I messed up, and maybe I diverted the course of history and God's master plan, and I gave the bracha to the wrong person, I am at fault. And his immediate reaction was, you know, he didn't say, oh, wait a second. Yeah, he came in, he was dressed up, and he pretended to be you, and he faked me out, and he claimed to be Esav. There is that comes up also, at least when he's trying to explain it away to Esav. But his initial reaction is not to put the blame on somebody else. His initial reaction is, I'm petrified of my Averos. Petrified of my Averos. Yaakov Avinu also, there are times when he's scared, Yaakov is afraid. He's afraid of Esav when he's coming back to Eretz Yisrael and he davens and he sends the gifts and he makes a military strategy and he's afraid. Hashem says, don't be afraid, but he's afraid. He's afraid, why? Even though Hashem promised me you're going to be safe and I'm going to take care of you, Shema Niskalkol Ba'avon. Maybe I did an Aveira and that is going to undo what Hashem promised me. Yitzchak's initial reaction is, don't blame someone else. And he could have. Imamish could have. Someone tricked him. His own son tricked him. His initial reaction is, wait a minute. Nothing happens by accident. And if this happened to me, if I made a serious mistake, maybe I'm at fault. One more example. Parshas Vayetze. Next week. Vateiru Rachel ki lo yolda liyako vatikami Rachel ba'achosa. Rachel sees she has no kids. Who has all the kids? Her big sister Leah, who wasn't really supposed to be there in the first place. Right? She's the third wheel. Doesn't belong here in this marriage. And she's one of the other kids. What does the pasuk say? Vatikane Rachel b'achosa. What does that mean? Vatikane Rachel b'achosa.
She bought
her sister. Vatikane with an aleph, right? With a hey, right? She was jealous. She was envious that her sister had all the kids and she had none. Zok Rashi, what does it mean she was jealous? Come on. Rachel, you mean she's jealous? Come on. Hard to believe. Zok Rashi, kana b'masa hatovim. She was jealous. There's one type of jealousy. Chazal say is a good type of jealousy. We call it kina sofrim. When I see someone else who has a higher level of achievements in Torah and mitzvos, and I say, oh, I wish I was on that level as well. Amra, ilulei shetzadka mimeni lozachsa lebanim. Her envy was that Leah must be a holier person than me, a bigger tzadekes, because the way to attribute the blessings that she enjoys versus what I am lacking, those children, that ability to give birth to the Shvatim, it must be because she's a bigger tzaddikus than me. It must be that I'm not working hard enough. It must be that there's an area that I can try harder to grow to be a better Oved Hashem. So what do you see over here, Abosa? You see again and again the Milo of the Abos and the Imahos. The lesson that they're trying to teach us is there's always other people to blame. Right? Think about how many people Rachel could have blamed also. Right? Imagine, Rachel sacrificed everything. She sacrificed her own husband to let her sister be first so she wouldn't be embarrassed. Was Rachel not in position to, like, someone owed her something? Right? Leah owed her something. Her father, who tricked her husband, also owed her something. There's so many reasons why Leah won and Rachel was not the person to blame. If anything, she was the tzaddikus. But she didn't look at it like that. She didn't look to blame someone else. She was looking at herself. Go quickly, just to give some other examples. Yosef, when he's stuck in jail, the beginning of Parshas Miketz, it says that he was languishing there for 2 years. Miketz shnasayim yamim. At the end of 2 years, that's when Paro has his dream. Ramosha Schoenbach writes in Tam Vidas, why that unusual term, Miketz shnasayim yamim, 2 years of days. That's not how you say 2 years. You say 2 years. It's not 2 years of days. The answer is because every single day Yosef woke up and he asked himself, why am I still in the jail today? Why am I still in the jail today? Every day he would do tshuva. And every day would be another day of introspection and reflection. I'm only here Tuesday. I'm only here Wednesday. I'm only here Thursday because of a fault in my own behavior. And I'm being punished for that. And it doesn't matter how long. Again, I can blame the Sar Mashkim. I asked him, I freed him from jail. I gave him the best prophecy. And I told him, just mention my name to power and get me out of here. And he forgot about me for 2 years. It's my fault. I'm not going to blame it on somebody else. And finally, Aaron HaKohen, multiple times. We discussed recently, Vayidom Aaron. What does that mean? Aaron's sons die. Nadav Avihu in Parshas Shmini. And what's his reaction? Vayidom Aaron. What does it mean? Aaron was silent. What does it mean he was silent? So we understand, he accepted the din from Shemayim. I don't understand why Hashem does it. He killed them. And they deserve, in Hashem's master plan, to die, and I'm not going to react. Rabban says he cried, and afterwards he was silent. He was able to get himself together. What was he responding to? Why was he mourning first, in pain, and then all of a sudden he's able to get himself together? Answers the Ramban, and some sofer reads this into the Ramban, that initially he cried, because he thought that, yes, they paskin the halacha before their Rebbe Moshe Rabbeinu, and they deserve to die for that, but he couldn't imagine that Moshe Rabbeinu would be makbid on them, would care so much that it should lead to their death. So instead he says, Al-Kain, only when Moshe Rabbeinu says to him, this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Bekrova HaKadesh, that I'm going to sanctify my name, or I'm going to sanctify my holy people like Moshe Rabbeinu, with other holy people, then Aaron is able to be quiet. You know why Aaron cried? You know why he cried? He cried because he thought that they died because of his averos. His immediate reaction to his son's dying was, it's my fault. And he was torn apart that he had failed as the tzaddik he wanted to be, didn't reach the level that he was expected to be at, and the response was the death of his children. Only when Moshe Rabbeinu explained that that's not the reason, then he was able to be silent and say, I'm a kabbal. But before that, he pinned it on himself. And that's the midah of tzaddikim. That's the midah of tzaddikim that we're trying to bring out. Don't have time to go into more examples, except for the following one, which I think is so powerful. And then I want to share with you a story or two, and then we'll close. Moshe Rabbeinu, If you fast forward to Parshas Va'era, so Moshe Rabbeinu is on Har Sinai talking to God, and Hashem is trying to send him on this mission. I don't want to talk about the episode that you brought up before, Shai, where he says he's not worthy. That's a question not where there's something to blame because nothing's happened yet, but Moshe Rabbeinu is there in his humility saying that I am not capable of carrying out this mission. But later in the conversation, we have more of a specific analysis of what that means to be unsuccessful. And the pasuk says, in Perek Vav, Vaydaber Moshe l'vnei Hashem le'mor, Hein b'nei Yisrael l'shomu elai v'eichish meini parav ani ara asfasayim. I don't know if that's what you're referring to before, Shai. But he says, I can't be the one to communicate this announcement to the Jewish people and this to arouse them to be ready to leave Mitzrayim and tell them that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is remembering them, because ani ara asfasayim. Okay, number one. But in particular, I can't get to Paro, right? The Jewish people didn't listen to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu had already been to Mitzrayim talking to them, and they didn't give him the time of day. They didn't give him the time of day. So he says to Hashem, now you want to send me to Paro? The Jewish people didn't listen to me. I can't even speak. Of course, Paro's not going to listen to me. Zuck Rashi on the spot. This is one of the 10 Kal Vachomers in the Torah. What's a Kal Vachomer? If the Jews want to get freed, right, they should be the first people to perk up and listen to me. And they're not paying attention. Kal Vachomer, Paro has no interest in freeing the Jews. He's going to laugh me out of the palace. In fact, the Balaam Moser, that's the worst Kal Vachomer ever heard. That's the worst Kal Vachomer ever heard. Why is that the worst Kal Vachomer ever heard? Joey, why is that a bad Kal Vachomer? What's a Kal Vachomer? If the Jews won't listen to me when I tell them it's time to leave Mitzrayim, certainly Paro's not going to listen to me.
If Moses
Okay, maybe. I want to know why this is the worst cop corner. Okay, not just why it's a bad cop corner. But what was the reason that the Jews didn't listen? The Torah tells us exactly why they didn't listen. What was the reason? It's right here. Vayidaber Moshe Kain El Bnei Yisrael Velo Shamu El Moshe Mikol Tzeruach Umi Avodah Kasha. They didn't have the brain space to listen to Moshe Rabbeinu because they were so overworked. They were exhausted. Their head was in a totally different place. Mikol Tzeruach Umi Avodah Kasha. Except the pshat why the Jewish people couldn't listen to Moshe Rabbeinu was because they were so tired and unable to think out of the box of slavery. Paro? How do you say certainly Paro's not going to listen? Was Paro enslaved? Was Paro exhausted? Was Paro under duress of the enslavement? No! He was chilling in the palace with, like, you know, they were doing that fan thing and serving him drinks. Where's the Kotzer Ruach we have all the kasha? You want to be a cop homer? What's the pshat? The pshat is, but Moshe Rabbeinu's mind, that was the cop homer. In Moshe Rabbeinu didn't first blame the people and say, oh, they're not giving me the time of the day. In Moshe Rabbeinu's mind, if I tried to speak to them and they didn't listen, you know what the problem is? It's because I have a speech impediment. Because I did something wrong and I didn't get the message across in the right way that they would hear it. So certainly Paro's not going to listen to me. He didn't blame it on them. His initial reaction was to be introspective and say, the fault is by me, and I'm the one who needs to measure up. I'm the one who needs to correct. When you play ball, and you have a team, and the team loses, so either you can be that guy who's blaming it on someone else, who never passed, and was always hogging, and always missing the shots. You can blame it on the guy who wasn't working hard enough. Or you can take your chalik and say, I'm responsible in my own right. And instead of focusing on what everybody else is doing wrong, the initial reaction of Yid is to first look inside. Not to get stuck there, like we saw by Rivka. You can't get stuck there. But I need to first, before I'm looking to bring someone else and pin it on them, first I need to give the muster to myself before I even have the right to look outside and blame someone else too. In the War of Independence, 1948, so, unfortunately, there were terrible, terrible losses, terrible casualties. The Arabs were ruthless. They captured the old city. And in capturing the old city, there were so many gruesome bombings and shellings, and people lost their lives. And it didn't just affect the old city. It affected the neighbors outside the old city as well. Yerushalayim wasn't as big as it is today. And the Jews were very concentrated. And many neighborhoods were literally yards away from Jordanian territory. And the Arabs would not stop until they prevented Klal Yisrael from holding on to whatever peace, whatever foothold in Yerushalayim that they could, and ultimately they lost. And amidst all the violence, someone came to the Brisker Rav. Now the Brisker Rav was not a Zionist by any means. The Brisker Rav was a staunch anti-Zionist, I think you can say. But they said to the Brisker Rav, they complained, you know why this is happening? Chilul Shabbos. People are divorced from religion. It's the result of a secular Zionism that doesn't recognize Yiddishkeit, because that's who was building the country, right? The people building the country were not religious Jews. They were people trickling in from Europe after World War II. But the force behind the Hakamas HaMedina and Zionism at that time is not religious Zionism at all. And he said, look what they did. Look what they caused. Look how many casualties. Look how many losses they caused. Brisker Rav said, what's the matter with you? Brisker Rav said, look at Yonah HaNavi. What happens to Yonah HaNavi? Yonah HaNavi, in the first parak, he's on a boat. Could someone describe the scene? Anyone ever learn Sefer Yonah inside? Just have to pay attention a little bit on Yom Kippur. Right? The boat is at sea. And there's thrashing waves. And there's a terrible storm. And it's gonna go under. And the sailors are literally going man to man trying to figure out what can we do. They know they're not going to win. They're not going to survive by natural means. And they say, everyone on board, take out your getchka, take out your cross and daven to your gods and do whatever you got to do. And there's one person at the bottom of the boat who's sleeping. He's sleeping. Who is it? Yonah. They find him hiding down under the deck. And they're like, what's the matter with you? Who are you? What's the matter? Don't you see what's going on over here? And he, in the conversation, he says, this whole storm, Yodea ani ki bishali hasar hagadol hazeh aleichem. I'm telling you guys, you can quit your idolatry, quit all your bazaar, it's all me. He says, now I'll prove it to you. This is not in the pasuk. The Chazal say, they were not ready to take his advice. He said, just throw me into the water and you'll be safe. He said, I do me a favor, you don't believe me, hold me over the edge, just like dip me into the water a little bit. And that's what he did. And every time his toes would go into the water, like the clouds would part and it would all be nice and peaceful. And then he would take him out and then the storm would start again. Back and forth, until they were convinced. And then he said, okay, we're going to throw you in. They didn't want to do that. I guess he seemed like a holy man. He was a prophet. And I guess they had a little sensitivity that they didn't want to throw anyone over. But what's the godless of the story? If you're Yonah HaNavi, and you're on a boat full of Goyim, boat full of Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and the storm is coming, and you're the one Jew on the boat, what's your reaction? If I would have said, you know, it's these guys. I'm the minority. I'm the one crazy Yid who's on the boat. And that's not what he said. Dr. Briskarov, a person's job is when tragedy strikes, is not to look around and make a list of all the averus that everyone else does. How come you're so busy doing vido on other people's averus? It's a great line. You're so busy doing a vido on everyone else's averus. You're so perfect? Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. And nachnu yoshim al chatoim shal achirim. We do all kinds of things in order to address the averus everyone else is doing without looking at ourselves first. It's a very, very powerful lesson because it is our natural reaction. It is our natural reaction to place the blame on a communal level, like the brisker, but on a personal, interpersonal level also. It's always someone else's fault. And one last story. Maybe this is even more to me because this is during my own lifetime. January 25th, 1991. 1991, the most devastating night for Eretz Yisrael during the first Gulf War. 7 of Saddam Hussein's Scud missiles landed in the country despite the Patriot missiles the United States had sent to intercept them. I remember, I was a kid, I was about 10 years old, but we watched on TV. And you could see on the news the footage of... missiles being shot by Iraq aimed directly at Eretz Yisrael. And everyone we knew in Israel was in a sealed room with gas masks on, night after night, and Iraq was firing. The Rishayim were firing missiles. And we watched from America, and the United States sent the Patriot missile battery to intercept. And they had some, you know, not so different than, you know, I don't know how the difference in the technology from the Iron Dome. But they were able to fire these Patriot missiles to shoot down the Scud missiles in midair. But it didn't always work. And on that night, 7 missiles landed in Ramat Gan. And Ramat Gan is literally the next neighborhood over from Bnei Brak. The 150 apartments were damaged. 400 apartments were damaged and 150 were totally destroyed. And again, Ramat Gan is just feet away from Bnei Brak. So Rav Shach, Rav Shiva Ponovich at the time, died around the year 2000, something, 2001, 2002. So he was a Rav Shiva Ponovich at the time. And some relatives visited him the next day and said, oh, you know, we know where the missiles landed. They landed in Ramat Gan, where the people aren't from live. They're not going to land in Bnei Brak, right? So he says, oh, this is a fulfillment of the pasuk that says, by the Makos. My friend quotes the story in his Haggadah. By the Makos, so Hashem says, I'm going to delineate the land of Goshen from the rest of Mitzrayim. The Makos are going to hit in Mitzrayim, and they won't touch anyone, any of the Jewish people in Goshen. So he says, oh, this is mamash what happened. The secular Jews who live in Ramat Gan, they get hit with the missiles. Now we're here and we're safe in Bnei Brak. And you know, Rav Shach said, he reacted like a gadol reacts. He said, you know what? My reaction was just the opposite of your reaction. My reaction was like Yonah HaNavi. When he's on a ship and the storm is hitting, he's not thinking about what everyone else did wrong. He said, you know why the Scuds fell Friday night at 7 p.m.? That's when they fell, Friday night at 7 p.m. Because at that time, on a January Friday night, instead of going to the Beis Medrash and learning in Bnei Brak, all the people were probably sitting around schmoozing at their tables, doing nothing. And the scuds landed dafka at that time when we didn't have the protection of Torah. So you know whose fault it is? It's the people in the Bnei Brak fault that it fell just then, when you should have been the base medrash learning. So don't tell me what everyone else is doing wrong and that's why they're getting punished. Look inside yourself and see where you can be misakin and see where you can grow before you start doing vidu on everyone else's averos. That's the pshat. That's the lesson of Rivka. And that's Begadol. Tursi once said in a masterful drasha, I'll put this in the group also, it's a recording. When I was maybe a little bit older than you, he gave a profoundly moving Musar Shmuz about how a person searches for God. And the number one way to search for God is when things go wrong. I don't know if it's the number one, but one of the many ways a person searches for God is to be able to look inside themselves before blaming other people. I have to talk about that some other time, but he mentioned a story about a certain gadol who as a young man was recommended a shidduch, and they were engaged, and the shidduch was a girl from also a very illustrious Torah family, and for whatever reason they broke off the engagement. He broke off the engagement. And breaking off engagement is a very, very shameful thing for all parties, but especially the underdog. And the girl's family was tremendously hurt, and there's a saying, and there's basis for this, and in Kabbalah, it's much more serious to break off an engagement than to break off a marriage. That's considered to be a more significant act. There are different minhagim that reflect that. And that's one of the reasons why there's a concept of tanayim. Tanayim that they signed by a wedding used to be a more concrete commitment that was made to ensure that the couple went through with the marriage and did not renege for any reasons that were not appropriate. So years later, he was married. He married somebody else. And they had a child, and the child died. Child died young. And he never had any descendants. And he always looked back and said that whether it was right or wrong at the time, this was what, and he had reasons. I'm sure he had reasons that it seemed appropriate at the time, but in retrospect, he said, maybe the reasons weren't good enough. This is a punishment. It takes a very big person to be able to look at their life in that framework, but even on the little things that maybe are not as dramatic and don't require the same strength to make those statements, certainly in our interpersonal relationships. Number one is to be introspective and think about where we can improve. In marriage, it's extremely true. Don't look to blame someone else. Always look inside of yourself where you can grow as the root of the issues, because that's the way that things get solved and that's the way the person grows. Okay.